Welcome to the Animal Voices radio show here on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, June the 7th, 2013. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I'm joined here today by my co-host, Jackie McIntosh, and our guest co-host, Cynthia Ganatra.
Hello.
Alyssa, Jenny, and Tim are away today. Animal Voices is Western Canada's only radio program dedicated to animal advocacy and compassionate living, broadcasting live every Friday from noon till 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and bringing you interviews, commentary, news, and events that you need to keep up to date on what's happening both locally and abroad. We encourage the movement toward a world where non-human animals are treated with compassion and mercy and afforded the basic right to live free from exploitation. In addition to our live broadcast here on 100.5 FM and at coopradio.org, our shows are also available as podcasts on iTunes and at animalvoices.org after airing. On today's show, I'm going to be doing a recap of my food adventures in Portland, Oregon recently, and we'll be presenting to you travel tips and recommendations for compassionate eating for Portland, also known as the vegan mecca of North America. And for our feature interview, we have Kathy Stevens on the show today. She is the founder and director of the Catskill Animal Sanctuary, a sanctuary for farmed animals in the state of New York, and she has recently published an updated version of the book called Animal Camp, Reflections on a Decade of Love, Hope, and Veganism at Catskill Animal Sanctuary. I've been fervently reading this book in the last several weeks, and I'm really looking forward to speaking with Kathy today live, as she'll tell us all about the sanctuary in our 20 minutes of time with her, plus we'll share some stories from the book about some of the amazing, amusing, and kindred creatures who reside at the sanctuary. Kathy says, in the ways that truly matter, we are all the same, and she will shed some light on her experiences with some of over 2,000 animals who have made their way through the doors of CAS in the last 12 years. This interview is coming up in about 32 minutes, so please do stay tuned. And moving on, Cynthia, you have something to share with us.
Yeah, so I don't know if you guys have seen it, but our listeners, if you haven't seen the video by Luiz Antonio from Brazil, it's a recent video that's gone viral in the vegan and non-vegan world. So you can check out our Facebook page to watch it. Unfortunately, the video is in Portuguese, so we can't play it for you, but I'm going to give you a little synopsis of what the video is about.
But I want to just mention there's subtitling in the video, so
yes.
Please do watch it.
Yes, of course. Yeah. So yeah, it's not, don't worry, yeah. It's not in Portuguese. You don't have to get a translator. Luckily, actually, Flavia Cavalante, who originally saw the video was actually originally in Portuguese, and she's a Portuguese translator who also happens to be a vegan, saw the video and translated it and posted on Facebook. So it has beautiful little subtitles for you to see. So in the video, little Louise is sitting down for a meal of rice, potatoes, and octopus gnocchi. And it's a sea creature that throws him, and he wonders where the rest of the octopus is, as it's only its legs are on his plate. He asks his mom if the octopus is real. When he finds out it's been killed and chopped up, he doesn't want to eat it. He asks his mom, why is it killed? Mom says, so we can eat it. And she mentions that the same thing happens with chickens. And he says, no, those are animals. And then he goes on to say, octopus are animals. All of them are animals. Fish are animals. Chickens are animals, cows are animals, pigs are animals, so when we eat them, they die. His mom says, yes, they do die. And he says, well, I don't like them to die. I like them to stay standing up, which is my favorite part.
I love that part.
And then his mom says, okay, all right, so we're not going to eat them anymore. And then little Louise says, these animals, you've got to take care of them and not eat them. Mom says, you're right, so just eat your rice and potatoes. And his mom's so touched, she begins to cry. And the little boy says, I'm doing something beautiful. It's just an amazing video. Like, just even reading it makes me want to cry.
How old is this kid?
He's 3 years old.
I know.
Three years old.
He can barely talk, and he's making these connections in his head. So what does that say about really small children?
It's so inspiring that kids at that age are still, you know, just...
And watching him in the video, you can just see his face and these connections he's making, like the connection on this video. It's
so authentic.
Totally.
And for any doubters out there, you cannot doubt this. This is so authentic. You can see the wheels turning in this little boy's brain.
Totally.
A 3-year-old cannot fake that.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. So it just had me, you know, thinking about other children. And, you know, I think, you know, Antonio, he makes, little Antonio makes a lot of amazing realizations for a three-year-old. And I don't think every child makes that. But I think a lot of kids do question and ask their parents when they do get their first meal of, you know, chicken. And then they have their storybooks that say chicken, you know, is on the farm. And they're wondering, they're making the connection, is this the mm-hmm. same chicken we eat? And oftentimes I think parents sugarcoat things, or they sometimes lie to their children. And so I really applaud her, the mother here, for actually, you know, saying these are the same animals that, yeah. you know,
we I mean, eat. That's parenting, right? That's the way I think most parents, should be, is just be honest with your kids. I mean, they'll make their choices for themselves, but if you're honest with them, at least you're giving them the right information to make these choices.
It's part of education mm-hmm. of your children, I think. I mean, education is a responsibility of parents, and yeah. you want to be giving them the facts and not hiding things from them, because I honestly think, like, this little child is making the connection, and he realizes, he was saying how he's saying chickens are animals, pigs are animals, like mm-hmm. he's saying that, right? And like, these are the same animals that we eat. And I thought that was just amazing that he made those connections, because I know that, I keep hearing it time and time over again from adults who say they didn't realize as an adult that even I was listening to an interview with Rory Friedman, who's famous for writing Skinny Bitch and all those. She's a huge animal activist, and she was in her 20s, and in the interview she was saying, I didn't realize that chicken was chickens that I was eating. Oh, and wow. I was an animal lover, and that's just one example yeah. of like how just people don't realize. And I think it comes from their childhood, because this is what we're not raised with, that education typically. So mm-hmm. good for the mother of Louise for mm-hmm. acknowledging that.
Well, and I think too, like you were saying, adults, so maybe most parents don't even know the full extent of what goes on to
that's
the
animals. That's true too. It's like a cycle, right? Mm-hmm. They don't know. So how can they educate their children?
So I think this video is also kind of acknowledging the changing times that we're in right now, that kids are more, I guess, exposed to that, and just the realization of what they're eating on a regular basis.
Although this child has, I don't think he's really been exposed to anything, because he's only three, right? So he's just starting. Like, it's logical to know that animals are the same animals that you're eating, if you know that you're eating animals, that is, and good for this child for knowing that. But I think that really gets quashed usually, right? Yeah. Like, and so this is like, you get to see this realization on his face and through his words on this wonderful YouTube video, and that's why it's gone viral. Like, it's, as of yesterday or the day before when I checked it, the subtitled version had over 1.7 million hits. And you were saying,
the Portuguese version had 1 million hits within 2 weeks. And wow. so it's, and I was just saying, you know, my friends who are non-vegans have been posting it on my Facebook, because it's spreading all over. It's quite viral, which is great. It's just not in, you know, the vegan world. And I don't know if you know the book Vegan is Love.
Yeah,
I forget the author's name.
Ruby Roth.
Ruby Roth.
We had her on the show.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. And so,
Children's book.
So she was, I saw on her Facebook page that she's sending a book, Vegan is Love, to little Antonio,
wonderful.
Which is great. So he can make, you know, the other connections with circuses and those types of things. Yeah, so
wonderful.
It's great.
Thank you so much for presenting that, Cynthia.
Go ahead. You can say it. Use the F word we say it live on the radio. Maybe you've heard. Mondays at noon, we go for an hour. We talk about culture, gender, race, class, and power. We're bringing sexy back under attack. Cause it's about time folks started taking some flack for promoting a culture where you must be a pessimist. If you want to speak your mind and say something feminist. But we know it's not true. From the truth you can't run. Feminists simply have so much more fun. If the trash that you hear makes you angry or bored, check out the F word at feminisms.org.
So I have a few things happening around, in and around Vancouver coming up. So of course the Friday morning chicken vigils, which will continue taking place from 7 to 9 a.m. at the intersection of Commercial Drive and Hastings Street. Please come out and join us. We're trying to make our group as big as possible, which is great, and just spread the message of compassion for chickens. And also on every Friday nights, or Fridays, Friday nights actually, from 6:30 to 8:30, join Vancouver Animal Defense League at 3888 Main Street, which is Sun Si Wa, and it's a restaurant in Vancouver, where they will be speaking out for the sharks and against the horrific shark fin industry. 100 million sharks are killed every year for their fins, simply to be served in a soup such as that at Sun Si Wa.
Horrible.
Restaurant. Yeah, it's pretty barbaric.
Yeah, for people who aren't educated on this issue and don't know a lot, we've done a couple of really excellent interviews on this issue. Mm-hmm. We did an interview with Claudia Lee of Shark Truth a couple years ago. That was a really great interview. Yeah. I recommend you check that out. You can listen to all of these past shows on our website, animalvoices.org. And then we did an interview with Anthony Marr last year when he was instrumental in going to city councils in the Lower Mainland and making presentations. And as a result, we've had some local cities in the Lower Mainland declare that they were going to stop serving shark fin in their municipalities and that. So check those out on animalvoices.org.
That's great. And I actually, just about a month ago, I recently watched Shark Water, and that's an amazing film I would also recommend on this issue.
Yeah.
Great film.
And also Meatless Monday is coming up in Vancouver, the official Meatless Monday, June 10th, and that's from, they'll be leafleting from with Liberation BC as well, from 4:30 p.m. to 6 p.m. So the Vancouver City Council has chosen June 10th as Meatless Monday. It's a great opportunity to do some outreach and let everybody know how terrible animal products are for the environment. If you'd like to help out or need more information, please contact roger@liberationbc.org. And this will be taking place at City Centre Canada Lions Station at Granville in Georgia in Vancouver.
I just wanted to mention, too, that there's a Meatless Monday. This is for Vancouver's Meatless Monday Facebook page, because I've joined it. So did you see the recipe that came in this morning for a chickpea ratatouille? That came in this morning. So, yeah, if you're in Vancouver, even if you're not, like the Facebook page if you want to find out more about it. And this is happening, our first official Meatless Monday June 10th in Vancouver. It's exciting.
Are either of you two doing anything special for Meatless Monday?
I'm not eating meat.
I know, every Monday's Meatless Monday at my house. Definitely I'm promoting it to my friends. I posted it on my Facebook.
Yeah.
It just lets people even realize they can do a day without meat. And
I know Alyssa's going to be doing the leafleting, so we might chat about that on next week's show.
Yeah, I wanted to do it, but work, unfortunately. And Car Free Day, June 16th, which is Father's Day. Car Free Day is happening again in Vancouver, so time to park the car and hit the streets for some eco-friendly fun. There will be several animal rights groups attending the festival, including Fur Bear Defenders and Liberation BC, to name a few, so please come out and show your support. Also, these groups are looking for volunteers for this event, so please check out their websites for more info. That's furbeardefenders.com and liberationbc.org. This event will take place from noon to 7 p.m., and streets will be closed from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. on Commercial Drive, Main Street, as well as Kitsilano and West End locations, and that's it as well in Vancouver. Check out carfreevancouver.com for more info.
What date was that again?
That was June 16th.
Okay, that's a really fun event to attend for people who don't really know about it. Go to Car Free Day. It's not just about, like, being car free, it's about having a summer festival.
Yeah, totally.
So it's a lot of fun.
So if you have an animal friendly event that you would like to have announced on the show, please email us the details at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com, or you can post it on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver.
You are listening to the Animal Voices radio show here on 100.5 FM CFRO, Vancouver Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And now we come to the food part of today's show as I present to you travel tips and recommendations for compassionate eating in Portland. Yes, I had the opportunity to attend the Vita Vegan Bloggers Conference 2 weeks ago in Portland, Oregon, which we featured on the show last week, and my sister and I made it a 6-day trip in order to accommodate some extra time to eat all the plant-based food we could stuff our faces with when we weren't busy at the conference activities or sleeping, and it was a really busy week. The conference was the main purpose of the trip, but the food was definitely a close second, and I definitely overdid it. As I mentioned, last week I gained 12 pounds during this six-day food fest, but it was all for the research that I had to do for this segment to be able to present to you my recommendations of some of the best compassionate eating to be had in Portland, also known as one of the vegan meccas of North America. So what does food have to do with an animal rights show, you might be asking? For our regular and longtime listeners, you'll know the answer to that. But for those who are posing that question, I always like to address this issue when presenting these food recommendation segments. We advocate compassionate living here on the Animal Voices show, and a large part of that is encompassed in the practice that we find ourselves engaging in about three times a day or more, which is nourishing our bodies with food sustenance. And we have the choice to abstain from cruelty to animals as much as possible in carrying out this necessary part of life. But as necessary as it is to eat, I think one of the joys in living a compassionate vegan lifestyle is to enjoy your food and to know that there are so many options out there available to you that don't include inflicting cruelty and death to the billions of farmed animals that currently are being raised on this planet for consumption. We don't have to partake in the system, and so I want to share with you my findings of how to navigate the cruelty-free options when it comes to eating in other parts of the country and the world. So with a limited amount of time that we have today, I'm going to briefly touch upon six of the different places, hopefully, that my sister and I experienced upon our recent visit to Portland. I've been to Portland now, I think, four times, so I'm always wanting to try out new places to eat as well as to revisit my favorites. And one of those favorites, which I'll start out with, is Portobello Restaurant, which happens to be named one of the top all-around restaurants in Portland. But not only that, it definitely ranks as one of the top vegan restaurants in North America as well. And so I feel really lucky to have been able to try out this place, I think two times now. So I made reservations for Portobello because you do have to make reservations to guarantee a spot to get in. And we went there our very first night. We actually drove straight into Portland. We went to see a film screening, went straight to that, and then went straight to the restaurant without even like checking into the hotel or anything. So Portobello, have you heard of it?
I think it sounds actually familiar. Yeah. My sister was recently in Portland, and it sounds like I've heard of it, but I don't know much about it. So tell us more.
Yeah,
please.
Neither of you have been to Portland before, so this is probably all new news to you. It's an all-vegan Italian fine dining restaurant, and I did talk about it on our last Portman segment. That was about 2 years ago. It definitely deserves repeating. So when you go to Portobello, expect to experience decadent flavors, and when you think of an Italian restaurant, you probably think of the stereotypical foods like pizza and pasta, right? But this place really goes beyond this stereotype. It's a pretty fancy restaurant. There are wine pairing suggestions for each dish on the menu, so that to me qualifies as fancy. Mm-hmm. I totally don't drink wine. I ignore those suggestions, much, I'm sure, to their chagrin. We're only drinking water, my sister and I. But it's there if you want it. Of course, it's all vegan wine, too. One nice option is that at Portobello, and especially if you're going for the first time, is you can choose a tasting menu, which consists of four courses for $35. It is a bit pricey, but I wouldn't say it's prohibitively expensive for the average person to go out for a very occasional treat. Menu items include the beet tartare, which I've had before, the beet burger, the gnocchi with spring vegetables, there's an English pea ravioli with morels, a Portobello roast, and the To Die For tiramisu, which I had the last time I was there. This is what we had this time. We started off with an appetizer of asparagus fries served with a cashew hollandaise. Ever had deep-fried asparagus?
I actually have once.
And breaded too.
I've had breaded.
So it exists. I thought they invented it. it was very decadent and delicious. And that's how I broke my, I was almost on like a 3 week like raw diet before that. That's how I broke my raw diet with the deep fried asparagus fries. My sister, she's a pizza lover. She got the pizza patata, which was a pizza consisting of caramelized onions, dug fur tips, which was like a tree on your pizza, which actually very tasty, cashew cheese, alder smoked salt, and thin slices of potato. And it was a huge pizza. It was only $12. That's actually cheaper than what you'll find at just regular vegan pizza places. I was craving vegetables. I had a cauliflower steak a la plancha, which was a big, they give you a big steak of cauliflower. It's a big cross section. It's about maybe 2 inches thick with a chickpea panissa cake, griddled fennel, and a green and red chimichurri. That was $14. So that gives you kind of an idea of the price. The prices here, right? So, and we ended off with a hazelnut caramel balm for dessert and a hot fudge sundae. Delicious, delicious.
You're making me hungry.
PortobelloPDX.com is their website, and I'm going to mention that we are actually featuring all the there's a list of all these places that I'm talking about on our website, animalvoices.org, with links to their websites. I've got to move on here. The And Cafe, we went there for breakfast. I was happy to discover another vegan breakfast dining option in Portland. In fact, I went to all three places that were recommended to travelers in our online Facebook group for the conference. This place was recommended to me by my friend Kathy, who lives in Portland. So thank you for that, Kathy, who's currently in Spain, she told me last night. The And Cafe is all vegetarian and mostly vegan, and it was a delight to peruse their ample menu of vegan breakfast dishes and to have to narrow it down to what we wanted to have. Because how often do you get to do that? Like, let me think here. What do I want to have? And it's not like just the one option, right? They had waffles, veggie sausages, scrambled tofu, French toast, hash brown nests, a chickpea frittata, and a super vegano burrito. I was in a waffle mood myself, which I never am. Like, I'm never in a waffle mood. And actually, posted a picture of it on our Facebook page, this gigantic waffle.
Saw that.
I remember I posted a teaser. I'm like, what is this? Can you guess?
It's a waffle with lots of chocolate.
Actually, it wasn't chocolate. Oh. It was a berry sauce, and it actually had a cashew-based sauce drizzled over it as well. It looks really decadent. It was good. The prices were reasonable. I definitely want to go there again for breakfast on my next trip because there's just so many options. Mm. Blossoming Lotus, got to talk about that place. We went to Blossoming Lotus again on this trip, and along with Portobello, it's one of my must-go-to places for a delicious meal in Portland. It's more on the expensive side once again, but I feel that the price is worth the value of the food and the service. The small plate and salads, they go from $6 to $12, while entrees are $14 and $15, actually kind of the same price range as Portobello. As far as I know, Portland has no fully raw vegan places, but Blossoming Lotus is known to be as one of the restaurants in the city where you can get raw food from, and good raw food. So I actually had the live nachos to begin with, which consisted of a spiced tomato and walnut chips topped with zucchini tahini nacho cheese, a pecan chorizo, avocado dressing, cashew sour cream, red onion, tomato, green onion, and cilantro. It was a pretty good sized dish for an appetizer, $10. There's a picture of it on our website actually for animalvoices.org for today's presentation. And it was really good. I also had a roasted beet and citrus salad, which consisted of sweet roasted beets, pickled red onions, a variety of seasonal citrus served with mixed salad greens and hazelnut vinaigrette plus soy curls. Now, have you heard of soy curls? Because that is a Portland thing.
No.
I've heard of that like Asian restaurants and things like that.
I don't think so, because it's sort of a branded thing. It's only made in Portland. You can order them, and the Food Fight grocery store sells them, for example. And I actually won some. There were all these prizes and free stuff at the conference, and I won soy curls, and I didn't even have to do anything for them. So basically it's like, if you think of TVP, texturized vegetable protein, and they're in curls, and then you hydrate them, and they're just yummy little curls of soy deliciousness. I had those on top. A Caribbean phyllo roulade. We had a luscious strawberry tart for dessert, which was just amazing. Now, Blossoming Lotus also serves brunch on Sundays. I haven't yet been able to go there for a brunch because it's only on Sundays. It's definitely on my to-do list because where can you get a good, you know, brunch, vegan brunch in Vancouver? Hard to find, right? Go to Portland, I guess. So I want to talk about another breakfast place, the Vita Cafe. I had been there before during my last Portland trip. Actually, Alyssa went with us that day. She was there on that trip. And I wanted to go back to check out more of what they had to offer. So it's another great spot to get a filling vegan breakfast in Portland. Now, Vita Cafe is an omnivorous restaurant, but it serves primarily vegetarian and vegan fare. Interesting concept, huh? Because we don't have anything like that in Vancouver that I can think of. Oh, the wallflower. Other than that, no, like they have like a lot of vegan stuff. It's mostly how many restaurants do you know of that are primarily vegan and vegetarian and then they've got a little bit of meat? That doesn't happen. Doesn't happen. And their meat is actually, it's like mostly just fish. So they also serve lunch and dinner, but they're good for breakfast. So we went for breakfast. It's very casual fare. It's cheaply priced at $5 to $9.50 for each dish, and they give you a lot. So my sister actually had lunch type food. She had a Caesar salad and a roasted tomato soup, which was yummy, and she tried both of them. I had the breakfast burrito for $8.50. This was a scrambled tofu with veggies and chili wrapped in a whole wheat tortilla, topped with vegan cheese sauce, salsa, and guacamole on the side with a choice of potatoes or brown rice. I had the potatoes. It was really delicious. So once again, you know, so hard to find a good vegan breakfast, I guess if you're in other places in the world, Vancouver. But Portland definitely impressed. I want to talk about the Back to Eden Bakery. Okay, so we have a couple of vegan bakeries here in Vancouver. We have Edible Flowers and the Cupcake Place, Fairy Cakes. Portland has, guess how many vegan bakeries?
Five?
Four. Okay. Close.
I guess
seemed
time.
Like you kind of knew that. Yeah, so we went to Back to Eden. We went to a couple, actually. This one was our favorite. We went there twice. My sister really enjoyed it. This is my first time at this vegan bakery, and it definitely won't be my last. Actually, we went there twice, like I said. Yeah, so they serve a decadent selection of pastries, and they also serve savory items such as quiches, chili, Caesar salad, a Southwest soy chicken salad wrap. But get this, they also serve ice cream, and not just like one kind of ice cream. They serve lots of ice cream. They serve soft serve. They have coconut bliss. And then they have a good variety of different milkshakes and ice cream sundaes. Really, really delicious. Mm-hmm. Like, Cynthia, what kind of a look is that that you're giving me?
I love sweets.
Yeah, yes. So you've got to check this place out if you ever get to Portland. Yeah, my sister really liked it too. The last day when we were leaving, it was our, like, on our list. Okay, we're going there again to get some treats for the road, and she had to get a milkshake. She got like a chocolate peppermint milkshake and devoured it all at once. And then I got this this chocolate covered s'mores cake, which is like this big. And for people who can't see, it's like a 4-inch mini cake, but it's like really like decadent, and she was feeding it to me as I was driving, and I ate the whole thing out of Portland. It was really delicious. Yeah, so we grabbed some goodies on the way out. Definitely worth it. So very quick mention here. You could say that a review and recommendations of vegan food in Portland wouldn't be complete without at least a quick mention of Voodoo Donut. So I'm going to mention it. Voodoo Donut. You've heard of it before because I brought you some stale donuts.
They were still delicious.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. So they offer, if you haven't heard of Voodoo Donut, you can only get vegan donuts in three places within this part of the world. Seattle, Portland, and Las Vegas. So when I go to those three places, those are the only times that I eat donuts ever. And I don't even really like donuts until I go to those places. So I bought way too many this time and definitely devoured them. So Voodoo Donut, they have like these three big sort of like revolving trays when you go around there, go to there. There's always a huge lineup, by the way. So I've done my research. I know that they've got two locations, and we actually went to the second location, Voodoo Donut 2. So just a little tip, that always has like a way shorter line. We only had to wait for a half hour.
Wow.
So, and if you go late at night, which I remember we did once, we only had to wait for like 10 or 20 minutes or something like that. The main location downtown is like 45-minute line when I went there the first time.
That's great to hear it's so busy, though. That's like, that's really good to hear.
Deep-fried goodness. Yeah.
But that it's vegan,
deep-fried
too.
Deep-fried goodness. Vegan. Yeah, one-third, but like That's a lot of donuts. Like a lot, they have a huge selection. So, if people are curious, I do have photos coming. I'll probably post them up on our Facebook page next week. And that concludes this round of recommendations for compassionate eating in PDX. And if you have your own recommendations for Portland, why don't you post them on our Facebook page at Animal Voices Vancouver? We would love to hear from you. And Jackie and Cynthia, are you going to be going to Portland anytime soon?
I think this summer for sure.
I'm hoping to this summer. Yeah.
So there you go. There's some recommendations for you.
I actually wrote them some down that as you were speaking.
Yeah, and they're on our website too, so you can definitely check those out.
Awesome. You are listening to Animal Voices show here on 100.5 FM CFRO, Vancouver Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And now I'm going to get into some news. So first I'll start with some local news here in Vancouver. It's been close to a year since the heartbreaking story about the dog Captain, who was left for dead in a Kitsilano dumpster in Vancouver. On Sunday, dozens attended a walk for the love of Captain in honor of the dog and other abused animals as a court gets set to hand down the sentence. The Vancouver man admitted to beating his German Shepherd before leaving it to die in a Kitsilano dumpster. He tried to kill the animal with a baseball bat. The animal did die. Brian Whitlock, 26, pleaded guilty to one count of animal slaughter. Prosecutors are recommending Whitlock spend 4 to 6 months in jail, minus the time served, in addition to 3 years probation and a lifetime ban on owning animals. And we were just discussing that. That has to be handed down. Yeah, it's a horrible story. There was animal activists at the sentencing wearing T-shirts that said, "For the love of Captain," which was great. But unfortunately, it's been moved to next week for the sentencing. So hopefully he'll get the biggest sentence for that, because that's a horrible story.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so moving to London, eat meat for greater food security, British population urged. MPs report saying eating less meat will help to ease food crisis in the developing world and mitigate price inflation. The MPs warning in a report, global food security, came as governments around the world prepared to converge in London for a summit on nutrition and world hunger. The International Development Select Committee said that the increase in meat eating was one of the many factors in the underlying global food crisis that has afflicted the developing world twice in the past 5 years, 2008 and 2011. But going vegetarian for just a few meals a week is something that most people can easily manage, with positive health impacts and impacts for the developing world.
And I think that's not really a revelation.
Well, yeah, we were just discussing that. We've been saying that for a long time, because, as you know, the grain goes towards feeding animals as opposed to feeding, you know, people. And so,
but I feel that when the government says it and mandates it, then people will listen. This is a great start, because we need this, because different people are reached in different ways. Mm, and I'm really glad for this.
Well, it's similar to this, our city, like with the Meatless Monday and all
right,
that.
Right, because once you declare a Meatless Monday, people will listen.
Yeah.
Right? It makes it official.
Direction. Yeah, definitely. Definitely a step. And so now more world news to Sri Lanka. This happened a couple weeks ago. A Sri Lankan Buddhist monk set himself on fire to protest the killing of cattle. Bowati Indaratta, 30-year-old, succumbed to his injuries in National Hospital in Colombo, where he was rushed to after a self-immolation bid in front of the venerated Temple of Tooth in the central town of Kandy. So immolation means to set a fire. This is a sacrifice of life. This is not a suicide, the monk told the television cameraman minutes before his self-immolation bid. There are over 5,000 cattle slaughtered in Sri Lanka each morning, and it must stop. Eating meat is common in Buddhist Sri Lanka, although according to the religion, killing animals is a sin. Animal rights groups have tried unsuccessfully to secure a ban on meat eating in Sri Lanka. An animal rights activist said she did not condone the monk's action, but she had added that the unprecedented move demonstrated the anger towards the inhumane treatment of animals. I know that in Dharamsala, that it's in the state of Dharamsala in India, it's the only state where they've banned meat eating there.
Wow.
So yeah, I think
I didn't even know that was possible.
Yeah, I think the Dalai Lama had something to do with that. So that's
amazing.
That's pretty powerful.
So unfortunately, in Sri Lanka, where, you know, they're not supposed to, based on the
beliefs. Legally they can.
It's quite sad. More world news. Oh, do I have time for one more? One more. So I'll make this one quick, because this is an interesting one. Iran bans dog walking in public and warns animals could be arrested if caught outside. Walking dogs in public or driving around in cars is set to be banned in Iran. Dog owners fear their pets will be arrested if they're caught in public, and they could also face a fine. It's the latest attempt to crack down on dogs in the country where the animals are viewed as unclean. Dog owners are now walking their pets at night to avoid detection. It's horrible. And I read it a little bit further, and the arrested basically means that the animals will be taken away and killed.
I feel that this is essentially banning dogs, and it's in the country, right?
Yeah, like, they said that only dogs can be security dogs, and like, so those are the only dogs that they allow, like the dogs for, you know, security.
So the only ones that are helping the people.
Exactly, yeah, the no pets kind of thing.
Okay. Thanks so much for the news. Our feature interview today is with Kathy Stevens. She is the founder and director of the Catskill Animal Sanctuary in Socrates, New York. It is one of the country's leading havens for farm animals and a center for raising public awareness of their sentience and their suffering. Kathy is the author of two critically and popularly acclaimed books, Where the Blind Horse Sings and Animal Camp, Reflections on a Decade of Love, Hope, and Veganism at Catskill Animal Sanctuary. I've been delighted to be reading her newly updated version of Animal Camp recently, where I've been learning all about the sanctuary and the animals who live at this wonderful community. And Kathy is here today to tell us all about Catskill Animal Sanctuary and some of the stories that you may read about in the book. Hello, Kathy, and welcome to the Animal Voices show.
Allison, I love the show, and thanks so much for having me on.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I am still reading your book. I'm almost finished. I've been thoroughly enjoying this book and reading about, you know, so many of your joyful and also tearful experiences that you've had over the years and putting your heart and soul into this place for the animals. I would love for you to start by telling our listeners about your story of how you came to open a sanctuary haven for farmed animals. You were previously a high school English teacher for a decade. So how does one go from so drastically changing life paths from being a school teacher to building an animal sanctuary?
One step at a time.
I bet.
But with a giant leap of faith. I had grown up on a horse farm, and we had lots of other farm animals, but no kind of consciousness about food or any of the issues surrounding food and the suffering. But I'd always had a deep, deep love of animals. And then when I was invited to become the principal of a new high school and turned it down because it was a media and technology high school, which is kind of not my cup of tea, I thought, wow, what is a way for me to combine my commitment to teaching and learning and a really almost a reverence for animals? And Catskill Animal Sanctuary was formed from a desire to marry those two passions.
So that's what you came up with. Well, your book, Animal Camp, is comprised of many short chapters, or vignettes, you could call them, that give us a glimpse into the lives of the animals who live at Catskill Animal Sanctuary and what it's like for yourself and the other people there to observe their natures, their behaviors, and their relationships amongst each other. One thing that I've really enjoyed reading about is the different relationships and bonds that the animals there have. Could you tell us some stories about some of these special friendships and perhaps some that could be considered as unusual to most people? And by that, I'm talking about animal friendships between different species, which I think are actually quite common, but we just don't realize it.
They are quite common, and surely lots of your readers have companion animals who are friends, dogs and cats, for instance, or cat and rabbit. But we've been struck over the decades about how size doesn't matter, species doesn't matter, and that it's really much more about temperament or emotional need. That seems to be more often what brings animals together. So we had an incredible friendship between a pig and a sheep. We've had many friendships between horses and goats. We've had lots of friendships between our goats and our birds, so birds, turkeys, or chickens. And the one I talk about in particular in this book is of an astonishing and very powerful relationship between the greatest animal I've ever met, who is a sheep named Rambo, and a broiler hen named Barbie. And, you know, what was everything about it was remarkable, but both of these animals were free range. We have a cast of characters that we call the Underfoot family, groups of animals who, for one reason or another, don't thrive with their own species, so we let them out to just roam all over the farm during the day, and they often are just kind of right in the middle of things. And so broilers, as your listeners know, have such limited mobility because they grow so big so quickly. And Rambo was claustrophobic because of his past, so Rambo pretty much lay in the middle of the barn aisle as he aged and was less mobile. And Barbie, despite being surrounded by a bunch of other free-range chickens, chose to not only to spend her time with him, but would find him every day and would somehow manage to get up on his back and fall asleep. And we have lots and lots of moving footage and photos of the two of them together. And you know, the story I tell in the book, in a chapter called "The Audacity of Love," is when Rambo's other kind of paramour, this we had a still have a sheep named Hannah, who was absolutely obsessed with Rambo, and who became so jealous of Barbie and of her relationship with Rambo that she would headbutt her off of Rambo and then sort of stomp out of the barn. And it got to the point where we had to physically put her on another part of the farm because she was hurting this hen. So the idea of a sheep being jealous of a chicken is something that most people couldn't really fathom.
People don't get to experience that in their lives, and that's why you're bringing it to us. You're bringing it to us. You know, last night I was reading the book, and I just had to go back and look at the picture that you have of Barbie sitting beside Rambo. It's such a beautiful photo. But you know, we could do a whole interview just like talking about the animals, but it's all in the book. So people, please read the book. In the book, you give a list of the different types of situations where the animals at Catskill Animal Sanctuary have come from, which I think is really relevant when understanding situations of animal abuse and abandonment. I wonder if you could briefly go over these situations to give our listeners an idea of what kinds of environments you are finding these animals in.
Sure. Sadly, many sanctuaries are, these are in no particular order, but many sanctuaries are, you know, sort of sanctuaries in quotation marks, and really are
pseudo sanctuaries
yeah. owned, run by animal hoarders, and they wind up being closing down or being closed down very shortly after they start. There are places that aren't even pseudo sanctuaries but are run by people who have a decades long history of animal hoarding. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure about its problem in Canada, but it's really epidemic here. We've taken animals probably from 15 hoarders. And, you know, there are often hundreds on the property. There are often many dead bodies on the property. The level of filth boggles the mind. So these animals need not only physical rehabilitation, but, of course, they need psychological rehabilitation because their spirits have been broken. We take animals from foreclosures, and then we have a huge number of animals who come from Manhattan or at least the five boroughs of New York who are either discards or they are somehow their escapees from some part of the food industry. So they've fallen off the transport truck or they've escaped from a cage from a live meat market. We've had several goats come in with sold spray painted on half of their bodies with literally a fluorescent pink line down their spines because I never knew this. I used to always hear my dad saying, "I bought a side of beef today." Well, when I was a kid, I didn't understand that literally meant that a purchaser goes in and says, "I want the left side of this animal." And the animal lives until somebody comes in and buys the other side. So, you know, there are also lots of abandonments, lots of lots of birds in particular from other kinds of institutionalized cruelty. For instance, in this country, we it's a very popular part of the curriculum still to do egg hatching projects, and then very commonly the teachers will put the live chicks into a dumpster. So every year we retrieve a bunch of hens from dumpsters. It's more situations than people than I certainly ever would have believed.
You know,
and what it isn't is, you know, when people say think of animal cruelty, they think of some people beating their dogs or people.
Right.
Our first animal was a horse who actually was a survivor of an arson. But though that kind of outright intentional cruelty is very infrequent compared to institutionalized cruelty, to hoarding, and to those more macro kinds of things.
I feel like a lot of these people are mentally ill. We actually did a whole show about animal hoarding two or three years ago, which you might be interested in listening to. It's very, very interesting. There's a television show, or there was a television show all about animal hoarding, and I interviewed the producer of that show. I'll send that link to you. So Catskill Animal Sanctuary, it's not just about rescuing animals. You also have some educational components that make up the organization, and one of the educational programs is running tours of the sanctuary for the public, which I really enjoyed reading about in the book, and I would love for you to tell our listeners about these tours and who attends them and what happens at these events.
You know, Allison, all kinds of people come to tours, and we consciously try to welcome everybody because more than anything else, we want to change hearts and minds, open hearts and change minds, and hope that that's the first step in people becoming vegan. And to do that, you have to be a very welcoming place, and we get, you know, our tours are full from April to through October, and we do 90-minute tours, and the pace is very relaxed. We're a big property with lots of animals, but rather than try to have people say a kind of a cursory hello to every single animal, instead we make sure every single person meets at least one pig and has the opportunity to sit on the ground and hear that pig breathe and listen and look into that pig's eyes and to hear the story of why that pig is here and to experience what a pig is and who a pig is. So and so it goes with all the other species. Sometimes we only make it around a very small part of the farm, but in that 90 minutes, people have, often for the first time in their life, spent 15 minutes with a 1,000-pound pig, mm-hmm. and then 15 minutes with a sheep who's trying to crawl into their laps. So it's a very intimate and personal and heart-opening kind of experience.
And from what I'm reading, you have some animals that the free roamers that are very social, and they want attention.
Yes, they do. They demand it.
I bet it just blows the mind of some people that these animals are interacting with them. And as you repeat in your book, you know, we're all the same. These animals like attention. They crave love. They crave just like being noticed by these strangers and meeting people. And I think we've all experienced that in our companion animals, dogs and cats, but not so much in a chicken or a sheep, for example, right?
Or a goat or a sheep. Yeah. What I love is when the goats and the sheep walk out to greet people in the parking lot, and you can see people just driving into the driveway laughing because they don't really know
not only that, but like what is happening? Like,
right.
I don't know how to navigate this situation.
Right.
Another educational component at CAS is the Compassionate Cuisine Cooking Program. Can you tell us about this program at the sanctuary and what it's all about?
Sure. We've got a wonderful chef who is a graduate of the Natural Gourmet School in New York, and she offers a series of classes. Sometimes we have guest chefs designed for the whole range of eaters, which is not exactly the right word, but the classes run the gamut from vegan 101 for people like my dad, as I always say, who mm-hmm. really wouldn't know where to begin if he were to try to change his diet, to people who are new vegans, or even people who've been vegan for a long time but just are bored with their cooking. So last night I attended a wonderful class that was a sit-down dinner for 14 people that was called Dispelling Vegan Myths, and it was a beautiful and delicious dinner, and around the table were new vegans, vegetarians, and meat eaters, and it was just a conversation about, you know, the typical things people ask, where you get your protein, and mm-hmm. on and on. The week before that, there was a class called Five Ingredient Vegan for people who don't have a lot of time but want to eat deliciously and healthfully. So the classes fill up very quickly. She's a wonderful, engaging teacher, makes it fun and approachable for everybody.
Sounds like a lot of fun. In the book, you talk about how the tide is changing with regards to human views of the most common things that we encounter in our society, such as meat eating. And you make a reference to the paradigm shift of Obama's election as president in the U.S. Can you talk to us more about the shifts that you see happening and how you see this starting to affect social change in the way we treat animals as food?
I think that the change is astonishing, and the reason I referenced Obama is because 20 years ago, no American would have fathomed that yeah. there would be an African-American president in the White House. And, you know, I think this country is good at social change. We certainly struggle no matter which social movement you look at, but it's pretty clear that we, over time, you know, sometimes it's at a snail's pace, but we move toward a more open and a more compassionate society. You know, we're passing gay marriage around the country quicker than, you know, it seems like every yeah. week one more state has passed gay marriage. So with food animals, it's that for a combination of reasons, I think because global warming is suddenly real with hurricane after hurricane after hurricane, I think because it's now in the headlines of the major news outlets, the importance of veganism for our health and for environmental reasons, there have been, as you know, lots of really hard-hitting and very powerful documentaries. There are lots of vegan celebrities. So I certainly wouldn't have guessed a decade ago when we were just starting mm-hmm. that veganism would be in the minds of ordinary Americans, but it is. Every time I go into, I don't often shop in the supermarket, I go to the health food store, but every now and then when I do go, I am making note of the fact that many of, you know, there's these little items that are labeled new items, and they are very frequently vegan items. We also see it because the questions that we get from people visiting us are entirely different than they were just 5 years ago. They're all about wanting to know how to make the change to veganism, how we begin, what's the first start, if I'm just going to cut out with one meat, which should it be? So, and, you know, there's a survey that 50% of Americans have heard of the Meat Out Monday campaign. There's been a 12% reduction in meat consumption mm-hmm. in the last 5 years alone. So the difference is pretty profound, and I feel like momentum is building. And I honestly feel, as sad as it is today, that Hurricane Sandy and how devastating it was and the fact that it hit New York City is helping this movement along.
To close here, what can we learn from the animals, and what is your parting message to our listeners on behalf of all the animals who have lived at Catskill Animal Sanctuary?
Thank you for asking that question, Allison. I feel like if they, you know, the animals certainly communicate. Mm-hmm. And they certainly have language. They just don't have our words. I feel like if they could talk, they would say, would you please slow down enough to see me for who I am? Chickens enjoy their lives so much, given the freedom to, that they would put an ordinary human being to shame. And I feel like these animals out here are having fun every moment of every day, curious and vibrant and alive and wanting to experience new things are examples of how the world should be. And I'm grateful for your program and hope more and more people will slow down enough to pay attention to what they have to say.
Yeah, and I really hope that people will read your book, because, you know, you've just touched the surface in this interview, but you go into it a lot more in this book. And you've written a book prior to this, too. What was it called? Where the Blind Horse Sings?
Where the Blind Horse Sings.
I need to read that book, too, because I need to find out all about Rambo, which you keep referencing in the new book.
Oh, please,
like,
do, because he was the greatest teacher I have ever had, human or other, and he came as the most dangerous and most violent animal we've ever met.
It's truly a beautiful story. Thank you so much, Kathy, for coming on the show today.
It's been a pleasure.
I just want to tell our listeners to find out more about the sanctuary and the book. Please visit the website, www.casanctuary.org. Thanks, Kathy, and have a great day.
Thanks, Allison. You too.
You are listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM CFRO Vancouver Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And thank you so much for joining us today. Next week is our Oceans Show, so we'll be speaking with Anya Budziak, Associate Director of the nonprofit organization Project Aware, on their current marine debris campaign focused on the amount of garbage that's being dumped into our oceans. Also, we will speak with Wietse van der Werf of the Blackfish on their...
Vitsa. I should have told you that.
Vitsa. Yeah, sorry. Of the Blackfish campaign, or Blackfish, on their campaign to expose the world's largest illegal drift net fishery.
Really looking forward to that.
Yeah. So that will be exciting. So please tune in. We here at Animal Voices show modestly ask you to keep connected with Animal Voices via the World Wide Web. You can do so by liking our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. And please send us your suggestions and comments about the show, either on Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. Also, please check out our website, animalvoices.org, where our shows can be downloaded. And please stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith, and we'll be leaving you here with a song called Sanctuary Song by Daniel Redwood for all the animals residing at Catskill Animal Sanctuary.
You are someone, not something. You're welcome here with your broken wing or wounded leg or branded skin. This is your home now, come on in. You've known the pain, now feel the joy. What God has made, no man should destroy. From this day on, in the sun and rain, you can roam through these fields free. Can run, jump, and play till the cows come home. Hang out with your friends, 'cause you are not alone. I want to tell the world what they've done to you so wrong. I want to sing for you a sanctuary song. It means as much to you as mine to me.
I know that this is true. Your loving heart reaches out to mine, and the light in your eyes may it always shine. Now is the time, this is the place for us all to feel compassion's healing grace and pray for peace for all who share this one earthly home, so green, so fair, where you can run, jump and play till the cows come home. Hang out with your friends, yes, 'cause you are not alone. I want to tell the world what they've done to you so wrong. I want to sing for you this sanctuary song. May the whole world sing for you. May the whole world be for you a sanctuary song.